It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for the 56th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a fun interview with Bruce Brown, one of the creators of the tremendously funny book Clay County, which is about aliens attacking and hillbillies fighting back. It's a great comic, very enjoyable. It'll give you all kinds of different levels of laughter, from giggles all the way through to smiles, and you'll cheer at parts too, just like I did. Then I look at the conclusion of Green Lantern, the animated series, and the beginning of Tron Uprising, two animated series, in the latest segment of Beyond Comics. Then Ian Cullen and John Luca Glazer and I talk about news and previews, and everything wraps up with a very brief look at some of the most recent comics. We got a lot to do, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome to the podcast Bruce Brown, one of the creators of Clay County, a very funny and interesting book about aliens that attack the Earth and end up fighting a group of hillbillies, which I found really great. How are you doing today, Bruce?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Good, good. I always like to ask people, now, how did you get into comics? Did you read them as a kid?
You know, ironically, it was my mom that got me into comics. When I was younger, I had problems reading. And at the time, one of the things that they did to improve children's reading skills was they said, hey, you have to make reading fun. At least get them reading something. So they started giving me comics to read.
Mm-hmm.
Not thinking decades later I'd still be reading them, you know, of course. But
right.
That was how it was. It was to help my reading skills as a child.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you should say that, because my mom did that for my brother and I. We were twins. And as we were growing up, what she would do is park one on each side of her and read. And we would ask, how do you pronounce that word? And when we got to like first and second grade, we knew how to say invulnerable, which nobody else in the whole school had heard of. But there, we were able to do that. So, you know, a lot of comics have like a high school level vocabulary. And that's probably something that you went through, just like what I did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In fact, I think it's kind of cool now. I think people are starting to take a second look at comics as something to help kids further reading.
Mm-hmm. Well, the visuals will draw people into the story if the words themselves don't.
Absolutely.
So you grew up reading comics. Any favorite characters?
You know, I think that when I was a kid, I always remember the first time I ever read The Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
I loved The Avengers. I was mostly reading Marvel and then later started reading DC. And pretty much just, except for a few, loved them all.
Okay.
I really became a fan of just good sequential storytelling.
Okay. Now, have you written for movies or anything like that? Or I'm just curious as to how you got to Clay County. What was the path that took you to that comic?
I would say that Clay County, in a way, is based off of real people. My ex-father-in-law was from Clay County.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, really, meeting him was kind of who I based the book after. I mean, he was a good old boy. He is a good old boy. And he can drink astronomical amounts of beer. And no matter what level of sobriety he had, things just always fell his way. And he was immensely proud of Clay County. I mean, the county he lived in. And he would talk about, people would say, hey, I heard about that earthquake and so-and-so. He'd be like, yeah, well, you know, it wasn't like that Clay County earthquake we had. You know, it was always something. He was such a character.
Mm-hmm.
And I would talk about him with friends of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, it just kind of dawned on us, man, this guy would make a great book.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, that's kind of how it got started.
Okay, so I take it you wrote the script?
I co-wrote it with Chip. He knows my father-in-law. We just started talking about one night, would it be hysterical if aliens attacked Clay County and what he would do?
Mm-hmm.
And as we just started talking, we were just like, man, we have to do this book.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so we start charting it out together, sitting down, and then I do a little bit of writing, Chip will do a little bit of writing, kind of bouncing it back and forth. Mm-hmm. And we just start making ourselves laugh over it.
Mm-hmm.
It organically grew from just us joking around about it.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys try to make each other laugh when you were writing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. And really, I mean, we tried to think, what would he do in these situations? What would this guy do in these situations? And a lot mm-hmm. of times, the reality of the answer was, he'd probably drink more beer. So, I mean, it was not, he would not take it seriously, and it was just a drunken stumbling through the whole event.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we didn't want to have some serious, oh, here's something, because everybody's done the alien invasion thing, and it's serious and all these things. But to me, that just seemed so played out. I wanted to do something that was just completely different.
Mm-hmm. And it is. It's a very funny book. It's not what you expect. It's quite hilarious and very character-based in what's going on with the different people. Even the aliens themselves are funny, I think. They're drawn quite nicely.
I do, too. I think that the thing that I liked about it is that it will catch people off guard.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably most people would have a certain formula about how things are going to go.
Right.
And then you take that and put it on its head.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why we introduced the character of Coleman in there, who is the resistance fighter.
Right.
Because we wanted that voice that would be, okay, here's what's the reasonable, rational thing to do here.
Mm-hmm.
To show contrast to, here's what a bunch of guys who have been excessively drinking are going to do. I didn't want to use high-tech weapons, so we sat around and thought, what would they MacGyver out of stuff? And stuff on the farm.
Right.
And that's
right.
How we created some of the scenes in it.
Yeah. Well, my favorite, of course, is the mother chucker.
Which
was a great big crane, which they've rigged up to fling large objects far distances. And, of course, it's early in the book when they come to realize what's going on, and they actually fling something at a spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the best sequences in the book, the ones that made me laugh right out loud, was when, of course, we're used to seeing Star Trek and view screens, and we see pretty much everything on a view screen, planets and all stuff. But we actually see what they flung at them, and it's coming straight at them, and the one guy's turning going, what's that? I busted out laughing when I saw that, and I don't want to spoil what it is. When you read the comic, you'll see it, but such a funny thing.
I love that scene,
mm-hmm.
especially because you have Coleman, who is struggling and lifting a rock, saying, hey, look, I found a big rock, and they're like, well, that's good, son.
Yeah.
You know, who cares?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a fun book that I think people, if they give it a try, they'll be completely caught off guard by it.
Yeah, it's very funny. Now, do you want to talk about who the other characters are? You've mentioned Coleman, who's sort of the real-world perspective on this, and he's actually the minority in this book. Do you want to talk about the other characters?
Absolutely. There's Vern, there's Hot Dog, there's Root. And honestly, they're all kind of loosely based conglomerate of people that Chip and I have met.
Oh.
And, I mean, really, like, one of them, I think it was Root, was some guy that Chip knew, and who was constantly referring to women as stewardesses, whether they were or not, you know, and constantly trying to get their phone numbers. And I think they probably were all horrified of him. And you have Hot Dog, who was an actual friend of Bakes in real life, and I'd heard stories about him, but I never really completely understood who Hot Dog was or anything he did, except every now and then he would tell me some drunken story, and he would mention Hot Dog, and he would end it with something along the lines of, like, a case of beer and a thing of whiskey, and we didn't know it was a retirement home. And that was all I could get out of the story, and I just thought, well, I don't know who he is, but he's obviously been on some exploits, so we're going to throw him in there. And I kind of wanted Vern to be a little bit of the voice of reason as well.
Mm-hmm. And they're great characters. They interact really well together. The book starts out funny. We're introduced to them. They're in what looks to be like a mobile home that's on cinder blocks.
Yes.
And they're basically all in there drinking, and they have the TV on. You can see the alien invasion going on the television, but they have no idea that's real life. They think it's the TV program or something going on.
Yeah. They're completely oblivious to it.
Yeah, and I just think it's great when Coleman shows up. They're looking at him like, well, what are you talking about? That was just on the television.
Yeah, the funny thing to me is that I've been to Clay County many times, and it's its own little world. Mm-hmm. I mean, like a lot of small towns and small counties, granted, things take place in the world, but overall, you hear more stuff that's going down at the grocery store or so-and-so's animals got loose. It's so much more centralized to the world they live in. So to me, it only made sense. And then we just took it a little step farther, basically, that the whole planet's been invaded and they're completely clueless about it.
Mm-hmm.
They're more concerned with NASCAR, drinking, and drinking.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because in a little town that I grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania, they had a news program, and the news program, it was like you're talking about, they were focused on, well, a library's going to close, a mailman's retiring, all the stuff that was happening locally, and every half an hour of the news, they would have what they called Around the World in 60 Seconds.
Yes.
And to make sure that you would not go away, they put a little clock on there, and you'd see the timer going down, so you knew there's only 45 more seconds before we get back to what's really important. And a lot, you make me think of that when you talk about these things, because there are pockets, and not only in the United States, but around the world, where communities are pretty, they're self-contained, and they don't really understand the need to go anywhere else.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
You also have a dog who's part of the group, and I found him quite funny, too.
Yes. I had a face set on my dog.
It was all
little real-life tidbits thrown in there. And I think that's the fun thing about writing your own stuff, is that you can add little things that people will find funny, but little things that just, the joke that just you get.
Right.
So, they all seem to blend together in a weird little way that kind of takes you out of what normally you would think of this kind of genre and takes you in a totally different place. But actually, in a lot of ways, a lot of people have told me, a lot of reviewers have said, wow, I know guys like this.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people do.
Yeah. Well, there's the one portion in which the two of them, I think, get captured by the aliens, and they're in the alien spaceship, and they're talking about what's going to happen to them now. And the one guy expresses what sounds like interest in having an alien probe inserted.
Ooh.
And the other guy's going like, what? You actually want that? And that made me laugh out loud because it reminded me of a joke. I don't know if you ever watched the show 24. On Fox, they had Family Guy, and they'd be watching 24, and the dog would be sitting there with Peter, and Peter would say, you know, I don't like this 24, because he never goes to the bathroom. And the dog turns to him and says, you actually want to see that? And Peter goes, maybe. And I kind of got that when I came to that part that reminded me of that, because you're never quite sure, you know, is he really interested in that happening to him or not? But he's not going to fess up if he is, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think the fun thing is that, like, I always remember there was that movie City Slickers a long time ago with Billy Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this scene where they're out in the woods or out in the country and they're riding these horses and they've got the old cowhand in front. And they're sitting there back there talking about what kind of reception they're getting on their TV and what kind of deals. Everyday life stuff that doesn't fit in at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I always liked that kind of how that if you could have, you know, the funny moments where there is that kind of everyday detachment that most people have that if you don't think about it unless you put it into an extreme context.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the great things about the book, too, is it's not just humorous bits. There's an actual storyline going on. There's something the aliens are after. And in the process of the story, we come to find out exactly what it is that they're looking for. And Coleman's very surprised when he discovers what it is. And that was another humorous part to me. We don't understand just how involved in everything that's going on the folks from Clay County are. Well, then that's the time when we come to realize just exactly what's happening. The most important thing that they could do is actually in Clay County, and that made me laugh.
And I like the fact that the residents of Clay County have no clue.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole alien invasion being sustained and world takeover all hinges in this one little Rust Belt area.
Yeah.
There had to be something that made it personal for them to partially take their mind off drinking and deal with this problem.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a time in the book when any of the main characters from Clay County are completely sober, are there?
It is fair to say that barring Coleman and the aliens, these guys are heavily intoxicated the whole time. that was the intent.
Yeah. And they're funny, too. The thing that's interesting, some people are mean drunks and some people are angry drunks. These guys are funny drunks. The more drunk they get, the smarter they get, interestingly enough, and the funnier they get.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, really, you're right. There are people who get drunk and they get mean. But, you know, most of the people, like, for example, when I met Bake, I mean, he drinks astronomical levels, and he was hysterical. Mm-hmm. He was nice, he was friendly, laid back, you know, there was nothing like that. Most of his friends I met were the same. There was such a laid back mentality there.
Mm-hmm.
And in the opening scene where Coleman shows up and basically tells them they're in immense danger, which they completely are oblivious to.
Right.
And you know, they're thinking, hey, are we still on for fishing tomorrow?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they don't take it at all seriously.
No.
That's Miss Coleman fun.
Yeah, yeah. And it's great to see that because, you know, one of the things that science fiction tends to do is wants to take itself very seriously.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's like in Star Trek The Next Generation, for example, there was an edict that went down that said, you will not do anything humorous because science fiction is very serious. Now, they completely forgot the original Star Trek in which they had episodes like The Trouble with Tribbles. And this reminds me very much of that kind of an episode, that there is something serious happening, but they don't necessarily take it seriously, everything that's happening.
I think you're right that science fiction does have that tendency, and I'm a huge sci-fi fan, but it was just like, for that example, is perfect. The Trouble with Tribbles, it was a hilarious episode. Some of the things that endeared people to the original Star Trek was the humor.
Mm-hmm.
There was lots of humor in it. And I think that science fiction, you know, the cool thing about it is it can tackle such huge concepts and such heavy themes that I think sometimes it forgets. It can just be plain all-out fun and funny.
That's right. And it's interesting because other shows after that would have a lot more humor involved with it. Farscape did a lot of humor. Deep Space Nine, for example, had a lot more humor involved with it. They would do all-out funny episodes with the Ferengi, for example.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. And you know what's funny to me is that when you mention those,
mm-hmm.
I think of different scenes I remember seeing on those shows starkly in my head because they were funny. They stuck out. It humanized them.
Yeah.
It humanized the characters.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting because when we get to the end of the book, everything kind of comes to a resolution that I really liked, and it ends nicely. One other thing about the book that gave me a warm feeling about it was that it has a Beverly Hillbilly sort of feel to it, that just because people come from different places and have different kinds of wisdom doesn't mean that they're dumb. It just means that they have different ways of looking at things.
Yeah.
And that's what I think Coleman does when he meets these guys. He's got his own savviness that they need to make things right, but they also have their own way of looking at things, and the two of them together resolve the situation. And that was the thing I really liked about it.
Yeah, I think that's so true that there is a tendency to think they're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the perfect example is the mother chucker scene.
Yeah.
That is kind of MacGyver-esque genius.
Yes. Yeah.
You know? And I think that they show, just because they're from a different place that's more laid back and not hectic, that they're, good God, they repel an alien invasion with it.
Yeah.
They just happen to do it while also being drunk, which is a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, yeah. It's such a funny thing about this. I remember I was in sort of a somber mood before I picked it up and started to read it. And when I got to the end of the book, I not only had laughed a lot and all different variations of laughing, there's smiles to giggles to all-out laughing and parts where I really cheered about what was going on in the story. Mm-hmm. And I came to the end of it, and my whole day was brightened by reading the book, and I thought it was such a wonderful thing. I really liked that.
That's good to hear. I think that there are so many books out there now. They're heavy. They're this. They try to tackle heavy themes. When I was a kid, I remember you could just pick up a book, read it, and have a fun time.
Right.
And that's what I wanted to do with this book.
Right. And I think it's very successfully done because, like I said, I was so brightened by the end of it. I just had to go out and tell everybody, oh, man, you got to read this book. This book is so good. It's so funny and so interesting. You got to read this. So I've been sharing about Clay County with just about everybody I know about it. And when is this going to come out? What's the release date for Clay County?
It is now. Every now and then with indie, you get issues where things get pushed back.
Of course.
It's looking like June.
June, okay.
Probably the second or third week of June.
Okay. That's not far away. Now, if it was in the previews, I saw it there and I ordered it through there. It's also going to be available on Amazon?
Yes. It will be available on Amazon. You'll probably be able to order it through Barnes & Noble. I mean, there's lots of avenues to order the book. I mean, a lot of people just go to Amazon. Part of the thing is, if you didn't order it when it was in previews with your shop, it may take longer. Just depends.
Right. Well, sometimes it's better just to go through Amazon, because if Amazon has them, they can send them probably out that night.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So, but I love the book so much. I laughed so much through it. It had its serious moments, but it also had such a good story, and it was such a funny tale that it was very humane and very human at the same time while aliens were involved. So it just made me smile. And I like I said, I love to tell people about the book because it's something very different from what we're used to reading in comics.
I love the way Adam drew the aliens.
Yeah.
Most people make them kind of menacing and... Yeah. They just seem goofy, funny.
Yeah.
And I loved one of his most subtle touches was that there was a leader alien.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the only thing he did was put like a mustache on him.
Yeah.
I mean, I just thought, you know, that's just brilliant. Just give him the evil mustache.
Yeah.
As the one to kind of say he's the evil leader. No, I think it's fun. I really hope it does well because we already know what we want to do for the second one.
Oh, good. That was my next question, was that if this does well, would you have other ideas ready to make into a Clay County too?
Oh, we were already talking about it. Yeah, we have a phenomenal idea, and I think it will kind of, again, I think it will be taking a topic that, like, people kind of take sometimes too seriously and putting a totally different spin on it.
I love that kind of stuff. There used to be, like, Dr. Demento, who used to lampoon music because everybody took music so seriously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly.
I think Clay County can do that a lot. It provides variety in your reading because you don't necessarily have to be very somber all the time. You can enjoy the fun of the moment and the interesting people who may be very different from who you are.
Yeah. It draws you in because you like the characters. But the truth is, it's hard to take it like heavy because these guys are hammered.
Yeah.
You know, this whole story is playing out with high levels of intoxication.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I think the majority of the people can sit there and go read that book and go, I know a guy like that. No, I know a guy like that. And probably have a story about him as well.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the fun thing about it.
Yeah. Now, another thing I really enjoyed was that it seems to me that the artist also developed the inside of the spaceships to look like the Starship Bridge in Star Trek, because there's the captain there, the head of the thing, he's in kind of in the middle, and you got two people sitting in the front, and there's a view screen in front of him. I got a kick because, in a way, it was having fun with the Star Trek Bridge set, which is a well-known staple in science fiction.
Yeah, I think he did that purposefully. Honestly, when it was written, I don't think we wrote it. I mean, we did write it like there was a view screen. They could see what was coming.
Mm-hmm.
But when he set it up, yeah, I definitely think that was kind of like a nod to that. And I think it added, when it takes you back to something, some kind of science fiction staple, and you're used to seeing maybe a Klingon ship showing up, that what shows up in the book.
Yeah. And I've worked very hard, and you and I have both avoided giving some of the details because that would ruin the fun of reading the book. And that's the one thing I don't want to do. I want to help everybody have the same kind of fun experience reading it that I did. And I really highly recommend Clay County. It's such a great book. Something different, something fun. It's not a funny book in the old way of saying it, but it's a funny book in the sense that it has a lot of humor involved, as well as a good story going on as well.
It's one of those books that you can just sit down, read it, and go for a fun ride.
Yeah.
You know, just enjoy a comic, basically, because it's fun.
Yeah. I wrote a preview of it for SciFiPulse.net and one of my columns, and I got a lot of positive feedback about it. A lot of people have told me that they're interested in reading it, so I'm hoping it sells very well when it comes out.
If it does, I'd love to come back and talk about the sequel with you.
Oh, I'd love to see it. I'd love to be able to talk with you about it, too, after I've read it. I'm sure it'll be as much fun as this one.
I guarantee you would.
Well, good talking with you, and much success with Clay County. I hope that people buy it and give it as gifts to people who may not be as interested in science fiction as they are, or give it to somebody who is interested in science fiction. I think this is the kind of book that almost anybody could pick up and read and really enjoy it.
I agree.
And look forward to talking with you again sometime in the future.
That sounds great.
fast equivalent to a 100-foot radioactive robot lizard, but with horn-rimmed glasses and a pocket protector. That's nerdy. We're on the rampage, laying waste to the geek landscape.
We'll talk movies, TV, comics, toys, video games.
And sometimes we talk turkey.
Don't you mean chicken?
That's right. So check us out at Megapodzilla.com.
We're also available on iTunes and the Zune Marketplace.
Aw, yeah.
In this edition of Beyond Comics, I wanted to quickly talk about a show that wrapped up recently its first season, and also talk about a show that's begun on Disney XD. First, I got to get my usual plug-in for Young Justice on Cartoon Network and DC Nation. What a great show that continues to be. Even though they've moved 5 years in the future, it's still a great program, so I would highly recommend it. Its sister show, though, Green Lantern the Animated Series, recently came to the end of its first season. What's been good about this show is that it's been planting seeds leading up to the finale very nicely, and a lot of that comes to fruition in the final and 13th episode of that season. I haven't heard yet whether it's been renewed. I sure hope it has. One of the things that encourages me is the fact that Cartoon Network is re-airing the episodes, and they're not much for airing reruns unless they absolutely have to or unless it's for their benefit. So I think it's a good sign for Green Lantern, the animated series, coming back. At least I hope so. I'll keep everybody informed as soon as I find out something. The last episode really does put things in place. The Red Lanterns and the Guardians and all kinds of other things are there, and I don't want to spoil too much because I think you'll enjoy it if you know a little bit less about what to expect, except that you will recognize a lot of the things and people that happen in there. So Green Lantern, the animated series, ended extremely well. Been a great first season for that show. The other show that I want to talk about is Tron Uprising, which is airing on Disney XD. The first episode, called Beck's Beginning, is aired, and they run it on the Disney Channel as well as on Disney XD. The animation's kind of interesting. It reminds me some of Phantom 2040, if anybody remembers that show, where everybody seemed to be sort of stretched, like somebody had grabbed the feet and grabbed the head and stretched them top to bottom. They're very, very tall and lanky looking. It has a Batman Beyond kind of a setup to it, in the sense that you have an older Tron, who is again voiced by Bruce Boxleitner, but he's been damaged, so he's not able to carry on. He's got to train someone new, and that's Beck, who's voiced by Elijah Wood. Animation's good. They use a lot of the music from the Tron Legacy movie by Daft Punk, which I always liked. It has a very computery kind of sound to it. So it's off to a good start. The first episode was about 45 minutes long. The new ones are coming up very shortly, and they run on Thursday night on Disney XD. Of course, being cable channels, you'll see them all over the place. So if you haven't seen Disney XD's Tron Uprising, I recommend it. Why is this on a comic show? Because it's a comic-related property. Marvel created several Tron comics, and eventually, I figure if Disney XD has already licensed comics for Avengers and Ultimate Spider-Man, you can pretty much be sure there's going to be a Tron Uprising book before long. We'll talk about other shows in the near future.
It's time for this week's news and previews, and with me, as always, is Gianluca Glazer. How are you, Gianluca?
I'm doing well.
And Ian Cullen. How are you, Ian?
I'm good, but it's bloody hot.
Yeah, it's getting hotter over here, too, so it's going to be warm. I guess, Ian, why don't we start with your news this week?
Well, I've only really got one news story.
Okay.
Probably not really a major news story, but it's worth discussing, maybe. DC and Marvel Comics are now focusing on gay characters.
Right.
It's 2012, and they're focusing on gay characters. What do you know?
Yeah, what they're doing is Northstar, who's an openly gay character in Marvel, is actually going to get married to his longtime lover. And then Dan DiDio from DC has come out and said that they're going to out one of the main DC characters, at least one of the characters from the New 52. There's a lot of speculation. A lot of people online are thinking it's Green Lantern, but I don't see that. I don't see that. And I also think that Grant Morrison talked about Batman's concept being utterly gay recently, but I don't see him being gay either.
I can actually see Batman being gay. Yeah, I can see Batman being a repressed homosexual. I mean, what about you, John Mucha? Do you see that?
Well, the thing is this, is that it's an iconic male character. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say if it's a hero or a villain. It could be the Penguin, could be the Joker, could be Lex Luthor, could be a number of people. I bet you it's going to be a villain.
Probably, but the thing is, there's a few tells with Batman, which can, this is probably where Grant Morrison's heading, but he wears rubber, mm-hmm. he adopts a young boy sidekick every 10 or so years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Quick, he's verging on him being gay, but also a paedophile. There we go.
He does have a thing going on with Catwoman, though. You mm-hmm. can't necessarily say he's gay.
He's probably
shy. Maybe.
I don't know. I can't see that. I just think that Batman is better left as he is. I could see the Joker coming out and saying he's gay. Cause he's had
yeah, I definitely see the Penguin.
Yeah.
He's very foppish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, other
Brainiac.
Than that... Brainiac.
Built to be dead.
I don't think that DC would upset the apple cart too much in that sense. Marvel worries me because the focus on gay characters, they had a cowboy character that they turned gay, and that was a terrible miniseries. I tried to read one or two of them, and they were awful, full of lots of standard, stereotypical gay jokes and stuff like that. So I'm a little worried about that. And Batman already has Batwoman. She's an openly lesbian. I don't know if they'd have two of those in that family being gay, but we'll see.
See, that's why I think it's going to be a villain.
I think that would be better.
I think in a way it kind of makes more sense for it to be a villain.
Not that gay activists would like that. They'd probably prefer it be a main hero. But
yeah, but I mean, it has to be an iconic person. It can't be like, let me just think. I mean, you know, Savage Hawkman, I don't know if he necessarily is iconic. Mm-hmm. He's very popular, but I don't know if he falls into that category. So you're kind of limited in terms of the heroes.
Yeah.
At least on DC side.
Yeah.
If it was Marvel, it could be a wide range of people.
Yeah, very true. Okay, John Luca, what news have you got for us?
I just wanted to expand a little bit on that story. On the Marvel side of that, on Astonishing X-Men 50, Northstar proposes to Kyle Ginadu, I believe. And then I guess they're getting married next month, June 20th, 2012. Mm-hmm. And they even made out invitations and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In a recent addition to this story, remember the million moms?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The ones that protested when Archie did a similar kind of thing with mm-hmm. Kevin Keller?
Yeah.
Well, they're doing the same with these two companies. They're protesting, and mm-hmm. you know what this means? The issues are going to sell out, and they're going to mm-hmm. become big collector's items. And
mm-hmm.
they're going to help sell more books, the million moms who are protesting.
Yeah, the bookstore that I went to had little, you know, I guess they're invitations or something that they had at the counter
mm-hmm.
that you could get, you could pick up and stuff like that. It's okay. I don't know if this is such a big deal, to be honest with you.
They're just taking Archie's lead. Archie mm-hmm. decided to do something with my gay character. People probably before Archie thought, no, I don't want to touch this. This could have a lot of bad blowback. But surprisingly, it got mostly positive reception, except for the million moms, which aren't really a million. But it meant big publicity, big sales, so these other guys see cha-ching.
You reckon the Hulk could be gay?
Hulk.
Oh, I don't want to go anywhere near that.
Wait a second. Because in the TV series, apparently Kenneth Johnson, who produced the TV series, actually went to Marvel asking whether he could change the Hulk's alter ego's name to David Banner as
right.
opposed to Bruce Banner, because Bruce Banner sounded too gay.
Right.
You know? So there could be a bit of a... there could be something in it.
All right, I think we've beaten that horse to death.
A couple of interesting Neil Gaiman news stories. Neil Gaiman was a guest speaker at the University of Arts graduating class of 2012. I'm sure if you Google it, you can find like a video of him giving a speech. And also the second Neil Gaiman news story is that DC is going to release all 10 volumes of Sandman in one big slipcase edition in November.
Oof.
So,
how much? Yeah. Does it say how much?
I don't know. I believe it's probably at least $200.
It would have to be, because usually those slipcases are $99, and that's going to be a lot more pages in it than the usual slipcase.
Yeah. In other company news, Boom Studios announced a new Steed and Mrs. Peel ongoing comic. It's based on the Avengers TV show, not the Avengers Marvel film. It's just going to be written by Mark Waid with Steve Bryan on art. And it's going to start with the Zero issue in August.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Continues from the Grant Morrison miniseries that they republished recently.
Right.
Yeah, I might try it out for the first story arc. I mean, I'm not sure if I want to read Avengers as an ongoing.
I've always liked the Avengers, Steed and Mrs. Peel. Mark Waid, of course, can do a good thing. Of course, his Irredeemable and Incorruptible just came to an end, so I guess he's got a little free time on his hands.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's continuing to work with Boom, so that's good.
That's good.
Curious, yeah. In October, David Hine will be collaborating with artist Doug Brathwaite for a new sci-fi detective story called Storm Dogs. This is going to be in Image Comics. It's a futuristic space police called in to investigate a series of murders in a rural backwoods planet. But because the people have decided to protect themselves from technology and the growth of science, they ask that each member of the team hand in all their equipment before they hit the surface. So what we'll be seeing is a group of four highly advanced technology-reliant officers having to fall back on their wits, common sense, and reasoning in order to investigate the case. So if you want to know more about that, you can go on the Comics Beat, and David Hine did an interview with Heidi McDonald. And it looks really amazing, the artwork too. Doug Brathwaite really is a really amazing artist.
Do you mean Braithwaite?
Braithwaite, sorry.
Yeah. I've actually met the guy. He's a good guy.
I'm just butchering names left and right.
Well, you know, I always...
tune in next week where I just kill someone else.
Well, but see, these things need to come with some sort of a pronunciation guide. If people expect us to get their names right, they need to tell us how it's pronounced, I think. Right. Until then, I'm not worried about that so much.
Yeah, but I love a good sci-fi story, and I especially love stuff like this. You know, mm-hmm. Sci-fi, police... planet, murder investigation kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is right up my alley. Mm-hmm. In other news, Peter Weller, the guy who's probably famous for playing RoboCop, but he's done a lot of other good movies, he's going to be the voice of Batman in the animated adaptation of The Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
Frank Miller story, so.
Batman's a lot older in this story, too.
Yes.
Well, this is going to be in two parts. The first part's going to come out, I think, this fall, and then the second part's going to come out next spring. So this will be the first time we'll actually have had a DC animated movie. It's going to be in two parts or a continued story. It's going to be tough to wait for that because even though I've read the books, they'll probably do the first three in the first one and then do the last three in the second. I remember waiting months and months in between. Let's hope they don't make us do that again for this.
Mm-hmm. And San Diego is tightening up on badges again. Every year it gets tougher and tougher. Last year you had to wear one of those plastic wristbands,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the kinds you get at concerts.
Mm-hmm.
You had to wear that the whole week. Mm-hmm. So in addition to having the badge, you had to have this wristband. Mm-hmm. But now San Diego can perform any of the following validations of badges on entry to the area of the convention. These measures are an effort to prevent illegal badge duplication and unauthorized reselling. San Diego may scan the barcode, require a photo ID that matches the name on the badge, scan RFID embedded in the badge, and examine the badge with other technological and or physical methods to verify the authenticity of the badge and holder. Before leaving any registration area, please make sure that the name on the badge matches your identification.
Mm. So they're not making enough money yet, huh?
They are cracking down. Mm. I mean, it's just getting harder and harder dealing with San Diego.
Okay, let's go to previews. Ian, what are you looking forward to coming up?
Oh, I don't know. Let's have a look. I've not really been looking at the page. Oh, Stone is... Yes, it's so hot and sunny here that my head's up my ass. We got a few things from Dark Horse coming out for the Star Wars fans. It's Star Wars Mud Ties Boba Fett is Dead, issue 2 of 4. And we got Star Wars Knight Errant Trade Paperback, volume 2, called Deluge, coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of DC stuff, I'm having a quick scan down. Well, I'll leave the B-Man ones to you, Wayne.
Thank you.
There's Young Justice issue 16 coming out.
Mm-hmm.
If it's anywhere near as good as a TV show.
It is. It's an excellent book. It's actually something good to fill in. Although lately we've had a spate of Young Justice episodes running all at once. They went straight from the first season into the second. And it's continuing on with new episodes, which makes me very happy because we went a long time in between new episodes. We'd get a couple and then they'd stop. And I guess they must have hired new people or something because Young Justice, it's now called Young Justice Invasion. And it's going great guns. I love the series. And the book's pretty good too. I really like it.
Mm-hmm. And from IDW, at least I'll be getting these two anyway, Rocketeer Adventures Volume 2, Issue 3 or 4, is out this week, and Star Trek Ongoing Issue 9 is out this week.
Right.
And the first issue of Star Trek TNG.2 Assimilation as well.
Yay, looking forward to that.
And I'll pass on to John Mooka.
On sale May 20th, there's a couple of annuals that DC's releasing. You have Animal Man Annual. And you also have Batman Annual, which deals with Mr. Freeze and the Court of Owls.
Mm-hmm.
IDW has the Rocketeer Adventures Volume 2, Issue Number 3.
Mm-hmm.
Boom Studios has some titles, but what sticks out to me is that the Emery Wars and Keeping Secrets of Silent Earth Number 3 Ultimate Edition hardcover comes out. So prior to Boom doing Emery Wars, the first two books that had been out, I believe they've gone out of print, but then Boom released a reprint version of the first two stories. Then they did the miniseries for Number 3, and they released three different trades for it. So this combines the three trades for the third part of mm-hmm. the Emery Wars. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. yeah, you can get it all now.
Cool.
And Archaea has Cowboy, A Boy and His Horse, mm-hmm. hardcover book. And that looks pretty interesting. I believe Chris Eliopoulos is involved in that, so it should be a good book. I like this stuff.
So do I. I really think Archaea, especially their hardcovers, are great fun. Rust is the most recent one that I really loved. I thought it was a great thing. So Archaea does good stuff. If something comes out from Archaea, I'm more likely to pick it up. So,
yeah.
Okay, let me run down a couple of things real quick. Like American Vampire from Scott Snyder, number 27, is out. Also, Batman Beyond Unlimited, number 4, which continues the J.T. Krull story about Superman Beyond, which I really liked.
Yeah.
There is Batman Death by Design Deluxe Edition hardcover, which will be something fun to have. There's an interesting book. You mentioned Young Justice, but there's also something called DC Nation Number 1, which is aimed at children, based on the Saturday morning series. And there's Green Lantern in there, as well as in his own little comic. So I'll be curious to see. I'll have to pick that up just to see what kind of things they cover in there. Some of the stuff that's collecting the previous things from DC, Green Arrow trade paperback, the first one, the Midas Touch. You've also got Ravagers, which is part of the second wave that's coming on. Superman Family Adventures, part of that kids line again. These are the guys that made the Tiny Titans. Now they moved over into a new book. So that, and a hardcover of Wonder Woman, because that's doing very well. Volume 1, Blood, and that's a good one. So that's something worth getting. I've got a publicized Monocyte, which I love very much. A really weird and off-center book. Number 4 of 4 is out. And what a good book that is. It's something so strange and so different that, you know, you just got to read it to understand it. Very, very good stuff. From Image, there's Walking Dead, number 98, as we get close to number 100. There is, from Marvel, Daredevil, number 11, second printing. It seems to be doing pretty well. FF, the numbers are going down on that, but it keeps going. Powers, number 10, which eventually is going to be turned into a television series someday. I like to think sometime. I reviewed Chuck Dixon's Airboy Deadeye, number 1, recently at scifipulse.net. Number 2 is out this week, and that's a very good book. It's black and white, though, so be warned, but it's still 350, so very good stuff. Bionic Woman, number 2, is out.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something excellent to have. Game of Thrones, which is based on the book and not on the TV series. Number 8 is out from Dynamite. For other things go, Rachel Rising is a strange and wonderful book. I like that one a lot. Rassel, R-A-S-L, number 14 is out. You've also got The Spider, number 1. I interviewed David List. The variant cover for the second printing is out, so buy that. If you didn't get number 1, be sure to get the second printing, because that's a great comic. I like that very much. Anything else we should talk about?
Well, I do have something to mention about an upcoming episode of SFP Now. We've got a really interesting guest on, an artist called Thomas Rash.
Okay.
And he'll be coming on the show to talk about a new ongoing comic he's starting. I think it's going to be a webcomic, Black Alpha.
Black Alpha.
Black Alpha.
And you can...
Are you going to introduce a gay character?
No idea.
In our debut issue, who's gay?
Oh, man. You know, it's ironic because my brother was telling me, you have to read Aquaman number 9 at the end. It has a big reveal. I said, oh, no, he's not the gay one, is he? And no, it's not. But everything now is all about the gay, so we'll see.
Well, you know, gay means happy.
Well, it used to.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it still does as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Okay, and on that note, we'll come to a close with this week's news and previews. We'll talk with you guys again next week.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
It's time to review some of the latest comics. As you've noticed from this podcast, I came down with a pretty good chest cold, and so I wasn't able to put it out last week as I planned. So I'm still using a lot of the materials in there, which is still pretty timely, I think. But I'm going to wrap up this week by talking about some of the books that we actually previewed or said were going to be out. So let me jump into that real quickly. The book of the week for me was Star Trek The Next Generation Doctor Who #1 from IDW, which was a great book. Wonderful thing. I got to talk to the Tipton brothers a few episodes back about it. I give it 5 out of 5 because it was very different from what I expected. I thought they would be going along and measuring each issue and giving the Next Generation cast and the Doctor Who folks exactly the same amount of coverage, but this time they surprised me by doing more on Doctor Who. It starts out with the Next Generation time, and the Borg and the Cybermen are attacking the Delton homeworld. It's a very interesting book. A lot of things happen along the way. Matt Smith suddenly gets a call to what he's calling a different dimension, and he takes Amy and Rory with him over there. And they may be in San Francisco, they may be on the holodeck. It's hard to be sure exactly where they end up, but they do end up in the same place with the Next Generation crew. It's really weird to see one of the Cybermen say resistance is futile instead of a Borg. The art's pretty good, the likenesses are very true, and everything is very good for each universe. Putting them together has not lost something on one of them. It's a very good book, so I would highly recommend, if you haven't gotten Assimilation Squared, gotta have that little superscript in there, I would be sure to go out and get it before it goes too much farther out, because it's likely going to sell out. This is the first time we've seen Doctor Who and Star Trek crossover officially. Now, there are some other books that I really want to talk about. Batman Annual #1 was a great twist by Scott Snyder on Mr. Freeze's character. We get to see some things different from the Tim Deeney animated series, although it's still borrowing quite heavily from his origin and who he is. But I think you'll be surprised by some of the things that they've done. Then, of course, Animal Man Annual by Jeff Lemire is just as interesting, as we get some background on the red and the green and the rot as we set up for the crossover with Swamp Thing. We'll talk more about future books in next week's episode. And that's a wrap for the 56th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be sure to be back next week when I have more interviews, news, previews, and all kinds of other good things. So be sure to be here. But until then, keep reading your comics.
Hal Jordan of Earth, Green Lantern of Sector 2814. The Viceroy of Demrak 7 claims that when we assigned you to police crucial peace negotiations, you punched him in the face. Is this true?
No, sir. I punched the Viceroy in the stomach. Then I headbutted him in the face. Sir.